Everyone has sinks at their house and hoses at their house, and almost all of us can go to one of those places and turn the faucet on and expect potable water to come out. Now, maybe you filter that water still because you're unsure of what is in your city water. Maybe you have a Berkey or a Brita or some other kind of fancy filter, and that's all good. But regardless of the quality of the tap water, I think it is fair to say that we all take having access to potable water for granted. It's just a part of our daily life. We expect the faucet to turn on when we turn it on. And you can see, if you remember that snowstorm not that long ago, when maybe the water pressure wasn't there, even if there was still some water there, how much people worried about such things. If you've ever watched one of those survival shows on TV, you know that one of the first things that they have to do when they get there is find a good access to drinking water, or to fresh water that they can make drinkable. Remember how when Israel was wandering through the wilderness, they were so often worried about where water was going to come from. How Moses had to strike the rock multiple different times to get water for the people. How whenever they were wandering in the wilderness, they even tried to go through the land of Edom so that they could have access to some wells for their livestock. But Edom did not want them to, and there was a big fuss about it. All of this is to say that especially in the ancient world, where maybe they don't just have sinks and water towers that they can just turn on and expect water to be there, wells are extremely valuable. When Isaiah is preaching to the people today, he says, "With joy will you draw water from the wells of salvation." What Isaiah is doing here is he is showing that there is something even more valuable than wells of water. It is hard to imagine something more valuable than that in the ancient world, but there is. There are not just the wells of water that provide life and a place to be and survive and a place to drink from. There is something even better. There is salvation. And there is a person of salvation. Jesus Christ is ultimately our well of salvation. Now, maybe that's hard to see at first, that Isaiah is talking about Jesus Christ here, but I think with a little biblical background on wells, it's actually pretty easy to see. The first thing you should know about wells in the Bible is that they are places having to do, oddly it seems to us, I think, but places having to do with marriage. If you look back in Genesis especially, but also in Exodus, Isaac and Jacob and Moses all find their wives at wells. When Jesus is in John chapter 4, and he finds a woman at the well, at Jacob's well, the Samaritan woman at the well, the topic that mainly comes up is the topic of marriage. When Jesus says, "You have had 5 husbands, and the husband you have now is not your husband," it is a topic of marriage. And the idea of wells and marriage does actually very much go together when you add this idea into the mix. At wells and in marriage, God provides. Finding a suitable, loving, attractive Christian spouse is a very difficult task. Maybe it wasn't so difficult for some of you, or if it was many years ago, you don't remember how difficult it was. But especially today, in today's world, for young people, it is a very difficult task. And if you think about how Isaac and Moses and Jacob were all worried about whether or not they would find a spouse, you can maybe remember that just a little bit. But just like God provides water in a desert place through the idea of digging a well, so he will also provide what we need. And for you at a time in your life, maybe that's in the past, maybe it's in the future, that could be a Christian spouse at the right time in the right place. But even if he doesn't provide that for you, he will provide everything that you need. He provides. He provides water. He provides spouses. He provides food and clothing and shoes and drink, house, home, wife, children, land, animals, and all that I have. And if you go to a well, you can remember that. Let's go back to John 4 for a second. Jesus answered and said to her, "Whoever drinks of this water will thirst again, but whoever drinks of the water that I shall give, him will never thirst. But the water that I shall give him will become a fountain of water springing up unto everlasting life." This is what Jesus says at a well. Isaiah says this at the well of salvation: "Behold, God is my salvation. I will trust and not be afraid. The Lord is my strength and my song. He has become my salvation." Who we need ultimately is Jesus. The woman at the well did not need another husband. She needed Jesus. And that brings us to the second thing about wells and marriage together. And that is connected to the idea that wells should remind us of immediately in the biblical view, and that is baptism. That if we think about Jesus as our well of salvation, we should think about how Jesus gives us the water of baptism, a fountain of life to cleanse us. Whenever Paul is talking about marriage, all these ideas are connected. In Ephesians 5, he says, "Husbands, love your wife as Christ loved the church." He's talking about marriage, but he's also talking about Christ and the church, because marriage is a reflection of Christ and the church. "Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word." Christ is the groom, the church is the bride. The wells of salvation are the water of everlasting life that come from the baptism of Jesus. Wells are sites of marriage, and in baptism, Jesus becomes the church's bridegroom, and he cleanses her by washing her with his well water. And just like Jesus cleansed the woman at the well by the water of his word in a marriage scene, so Christ, our bridegroom, cleanses us from his well of salvation, from the baptismal font. Another thing to know about wells in the Bible is that they are a sign of territory. Another aspect of wells you can see in Genesis, particularly, you can look in Genesis 21. Abraham has to settle a dispute with Abimelech over a well that Abimelech's servants had taken from him that Abraham had dug much earlier on. In Genesis 26, Isaac has to redig some of the wells that the Philistines had stopped up that were dug during the days of Abraham. The idea of Abraham and Isaac's and Jacob's wells were that they were a marker of where the promised land itself was. That's why Jesus comes across one of the wells in John chapter 4, and it's called, notably, Jacob's Well. And you have to think that when Isaiah preaches today in Isaiah 12 and says, "With joy will you draw water from the wells of salvation," and he's preaching to those who are going to go into exile, it's probably to them partly a prophecy about their eventual return from exile. That one day they will come back to that land from which they were taken and draw water from Jacob's wells and Abraham's and Isaac's wells. But Christ makes it clear to us that our home is not ultimately of this fallen world. I doubt that many of you, maybe you have, gone to the Holy Land and had the chance to draw water out of one of Abraham's or Isaac's or Jacob's wells. You can go see some of those places. You can go to the Church of Saint Fatina, the legendary name of the woman at the well, and you can see her well, or Jacob's well, there in that Eastern Orthodox Church in the West Bank, if you really want to. I'd like to do that one day, probably not right now, however, not a good time to go there. But it doesn't matter if I do or if I don't. That's not ultimately the well of salvation that Isaiah is talking about here. They shall neither hunger anymore nor thirst anymore. The sun shall not strike them nor any heat. For the Lamb who is in the midst of the throne will shepherd them and lead them to living fountains of water. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. That's from Revelation chapter 7. That's about not the West Bank right now, but about the new heavens and the new earth, which Jesus will bring when he comes back again. And I want you to think about that whenever you go to fill up a glass of water at your sink or whenever you turn on the hose out back. That, yeah, you have water now. And maybe it's not even that great. Maybe it needs to be filtered. But the one thing about it is that you're going to have to keep drinking it and keep drinking it and keep drinking it. You're going to keep getting thirsty again and again and again this side of heaven. This side of heaven is corrupt. There are infections that people get in their bodies that they need antibiotics for. There are addictions that people struggle with that they must overcome. People have depression that haunts them, anxiety that grieves them, grief that makes them anxious. The list could go on. You know what's in your mind and in your heart and in your body. But you know this, thinking about those things, this is not your home. This is not the place, this place of corruption, where you will draw joy finally from the wells of salvation. But the day is coming when you will go to that place. The day is coming when Jesus, your well of salvation, will come back. And he will recreate this corrupt place. He will make a new heavens and a new earth and give you a new, recreated, perfect body. And there in that place, will there be perfect water, perfect wells, and a fountain of everlasting life? For Christ, your Lamb, who is on the throne, he is your well of salvation. And that finally gets us to the last thing about these wells in the Bible, is that they are signs of victory. What Isaiah is doing here in chapter 12 is he is singing what is called a victory song. A war cry, if you will. You can think about in Exodus 15, after the people of Israel go through the Red Sea on dry land, and Pharaoh and all his hosts and all his chariots have been drowned in the waters, and all of Exodus 15 is a song that Moses sings. That Pharaoh and his host have been drowned, and Israel has done gloriously. Here in chapter 12, right after Isaiah chapter 11, where Isaiah preached about how Israel's enemies and God's people's enemies would be defeated by the branch of Jesse, here he sings a victory song, With joy will you draw water from the wells of salvation. The Holy One of Israel is in your midst, the one from the stump of Jesse, and he is victorious. Christ is victorious. The one from the stump of Jesse, the Holy One in the midst of you, the Holy One of Israel, he has done gloriously. He has gone to the cross and he has defeated sin. He has descended into hell and he has proclaimed victory over the devil, and he has risen from the dead and has defeated death itself. And yes, even wicked nations and kings that reject the Lord and turn to paganism, he will defeat. He will guard God's people against their enemies. He will strike them down. And every knee, one day, the day when he comes back, the day when he brings us to our fatherland, on that day, every knee shall bow and every tongue shall confess that Christ is King, Christ is Lord, Christ is victorious, Christ is the well of salvation, Christ is risen.
He is risen indeed. Hallelujah.
Amen.